And even though your family is richer than God, intimidates the hell out of me. Your dad definitely hates me, and your alcoholic brother keeps hitting on me. I honestly can't wait to be a part of your moderately fucked up family.
Moderately? It's pretty generous.
Hey guys, welcome back to Spooky Tuesday, a weekly podcast where we're breaking down all of our favorite slashers, thrillers, monster movies, and black comedies on the new scariest day of the week. I'm Sydney Thompson.
I'm Monica Height.
And I'm Chelsea Duff, and this week we're talking about Ready or Not, which I saw in the theaters. It was such a blast. Monica, I know you had already seen it, and Sydney hadn't. And Sydney, we know that sometimes you're just like not super hot on modern movies. Sometimes we get you. Sometimes we trick you into liking something. Did we do it this week? Did it happen for you?
Suspense is killing me. I really liked this movie.
Yeah. Why are you now saying it though like you didn't like this movie? I need a little more. Give me that earnest enthusiasm. Not like you are pity liking this movie.
We can't.
No. I actually like this movie. Monica asked me before, like, why do I have like such a bad like taste for newer horror movies in my mouth. Yeah, and this movie, so looking back, like when you look at horror movies from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, they're a lot more campy in their horror. And when they were happening, they were actually scary, but we're looking back on them and so their horror for the time is now camp. And so I'm the biggest slut for anything camp, and I have such a better time like appreciating and looking at it as a camp lens with some like scary parts like added in, which is why I just love older horror movies. And this movie does such a good job with having scary moments and building really good suspense, but having camp and being current. And so I really did enjoy this movie like so much.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Like Sydney explained this to me earlier today and I was like, you need to tell our listeners about this because I just get mad at you every time. But then now that I know what you actually think, like I understand now and my anger has subsided finally after all of these months.
Now she'll understand why I gave The Witch and Leprechaun the exact same rating.
I don't totally understand, but like I'm getting there. Here's the thing. I totally get it though. Like modern horror is like not trying to have a fun time. It's just trying to get like the most disturbing thing you could possibly see on screen. And like Hereditary, we haven't watched that yet. You haven't watched that yet, but I think you're not going to like it because it's just like the most disturbing thing that anyone has ever seen. Like The Witch, incredibly disturbing and unsettling. You just feel kind of bad at the end, but also cool because it's sexy and there's witch stuff. You know what I mean? But like, it's not a fun time watching it. Like it's a cool, I have a good time because I love being scared, and that's a huge reason that I go to horror. But I totally feel you because like back in the day, horror and comedy like kind of were holding hands all the time, intentional or not, and it's not the case as much anymore.
And that's like with older horror, it was like they were trying to be so serious. But now, I'll never forget, like, my dad, Halloween, right? Like, you've all seen it. It's not that scary. And my dad would be like, this was the scariest movie I've ever seen in my life. Or, like, The Exorcist. Like, everybody was just, like, terrified of these movies. And looking back at them, like, they're not that scary. I mean, yeah, they do have their moments. But that's what makes them a great movie to me is like, oh my God. And so like, I like watching older movies because I can look back and I get scared and I have like the absolute best time.
Yeah.
And the movies now,
there's
I just
more
like
joy.
I get well, I get scared, but I don't have that good time. And so I'm just like, why?
You're scared and you feel so bad and so sad.
Yeah. True. A lot of them are depressing.
Yeah. I'm like Midsummer, though. That's bad, sad, but also fun time for me.
I don't know for Sydney.
But Ready or Not, truly, I had a great time watching this. Like, I had moments where I was like, what the fuck? And then times where I was just like hysterically laughing. I was like, this is a great modern balance of like a classic horror movie, because it's not like, it's not really a slasher, it's not like a monster movie, it's like
what Clue it's on a, crack
kind of. It's a great devil worshiping movie, uh-huh. I guess.
We love a little Satanism in the mix.
But it's a little genre defying within the larger horror bubble. It doesn't fit when we say, what do we say in the beginning? Slasher, horror, monster movie, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't like
black
fit
comedy.
Nicely into one of those. Oh, I guess black comedy.
Yeah.
Never mind. Yeah. I changed my mind.
It's gorier than the average black comedy. There's more blood. There's a lot more blood. There's pints of it.
And like, the plot of this movie is really good. The cast of this movie
Who's the casting
director here? I want to give them a kiss on the mouth. I don't know who it is. If you're listening, I'm going to find you and I'm going to give you a consensual kiss.
Like, thank you. Consensual. I appreciate the clarification there. Mm-hmm.
I would never, you know.
But yeah, the thing is, Samara Weaving, incredible, has been in a lot of really good stuff, but it's also still kind of an up-and-comer. Like, I think we're going to continue to see her be in a lot of really good things. Yeah. Adam Brody, obviously, a hottie, the internet's boyfriend for such a long time, but also iconic, spooky in Jennifer's Body. Mark O'Brien, don't know him. I'm sure he does things. Andy McDowell.
Wait, say who they are. Andy McDowell is the mom.
Okay, yes. Andy McDowell. I guess her name is Becky. It doesn't matter. She's just the mom the whole time. And
she's
the
Becky
milk.
With the good hair.
Really.
She has great hair.
She is beautiful and wonderful and stunning, and everything about her is perfect. And then we've got, apologies if I say her last name wrong, but Melanie Scrofano, who plays Emily, who's also Winona Earp. We've got, and I don't know if I'm going to say his name either, but Christian Brune, who plays Emily's husband, Fitch. He's also Donnie in Orphan Black, another iconic character.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh my God, it's so good, Monica.
Oh, I'll put it on my list. I'm sorry.
Oh, so many faces that I know and love, but also that really are perfect in their roles here. You know what I mean? They're just – I was thinking about it, and we'll get to this segment later, but I was thinking, like, where would I even want to put Matthew Lillard? And I was like, I don't know. Everybody's so good.
Oh, my God. Everyone is so good in this movie. And I just – I forgot about a ton of the characters, but, like, it's not like – it's an ensemble cast, obviously. It's like a ensemble performance. But there are so many people who I completely forgot about from the first watch that just, like, make this movie. They don't have a bunch of lines, but, like, for example, Melanie Scrofano playing Emily, she is just so funny in this
movie.
Oh, my God.
I wrote in my notes, it's like, Donnie, Fitch, Christian Brune, whatever you want to call him. I was like, he's the best part of this movie. And then we got just a touch more Emily, like, one scene later. And I was like, no, it's got to be her. And, like, I can never decide which one of them is my favorite. They're both just so wonderful and perfect. There's just a lot of really good humor in general in this movie. I always write down my favorite quotes. And I just wrote down approximately 2 pages worth of quotes this movie, because I just first some of them
I'm
are
so
world
glad.
Building like the I wrote down the whole speech about Mr. LaBelle that we get as like the entry into the spooky part of the movie, and that is a big chunk of page, but I just love so much of it that I wanted to have a record of what they said in the exchanges. And I just,
I'm
like,
so glad you did that, because IMDb Trivia chose like really stupid quotes to list. And I was like, come on, there's so many good ones.
I love that you just called the whole site IMDb Trivia, because truly it is the only important part. And and they should rename the site after that, that section specifically.
I'm pitching a new rebrand for the site, okay?
So for anybody that hasn't seen this movie, the summary, to summarize it, it's Samara Weaving, her character Grace, is a new bride. And she's marrying into this, like, wealthy family. I mean, like, more money than God.
Yeah.
And they, on, when somebody new marries into the family, you have to draw a game from a mystical, magical box, which is just suspicious in itself.
Like, you literally put a blank card in, and then it comes out with something written on it. Like, this is a very magical box.
And her game ends up being the one and only game that's bad.
Yeah.
Because we learn that Emily is one of the siblings. She's the only daughter. Her husband, Fitch, he had to play old maid. And Daniel, who's Adam Brody's character, his wife, who is horrible. I
Charity.
Hate her.
No, I love her.
Oh, she's so good. She's such a bitch, but she's so good. And she's hot.
Stone cold.
She had to play chess, which I would immediately fail. I don't know anything about chess. My college boyfriend tried to teach me chess.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just
all about
like,
the strategy.
I am not good at this.
Watch
and
Queen's
he would get
Gambit.
Very mad at me.
I've just tried.
I also don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, the premise of the movie is that this family tradition, they made their money in gaming. And so they have to play a game to be initiated into the family. And
into the Legomas Dominion.
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Dominion. They picked the most evil-sounding word they could for their family empire.
Not dynasty. Dominion.
Dominion. Yeah. Which makes sense when you find out that the Dominion essentially came from a deal with a mysterious man named Mr. LaBelle, who may or may not be Satan himself. I'm not exactly sure. And they kind of leave it a little mysterious. We can debate
it's
that at some
vague.
Point.
Satan or one of Satan's close friends. Definitely a demon.
An acquaintance at least. Like an emissary of Satan perhaps.
Yes.
Kind of like a crossroads demon, if one will.
A crossroads demon.
You can make deals with a crossroads demon. It's how they always say the blues, the famous blues singer made a cross, like made a deal with the devil at a crossroads. It's a big Southern thing.
I know the devil went down to Georgia, which is immediately what I thought of when you said that. But then I was like, but that's the devil. It says in the song, it's the devil himself.
It's a crossroads demon.
The devil
I trust
went down
Sydney.
To Georgia.
Sydney is our registered South person.
South. Southern.
Steam there. I really lost my steam there. You can rebrand that. I'm sorry. South person is not doing you justice. I'm the bad girl of the pod. Chelsea is the good girl of the pod. And Sydney is
and
the
I'm the South person.
The South person of the pod. Every pod's got to have one South person. That's what they say.
Yep. Okay, so this movie starts out and you automatically seeing that Samara Weaving is the hottest person that you've ever seen who is alive.
Uh-huh. Iconic start.
Incredible dress. But they do something wrong immediately and it makes me really mad. And like, this was brought up in the IMDb trivia, but I also wrote it down in my notes. Why in the fuck are they looking at each other before getting married? You're not supposed to do that. They're hanging out smoking a cig before the ceremony. This isn't like a first look scenario, which I also don't believe in first look scenarios at weddings either, because that seems like a bad idea. But like, why? This doesn't make any sense.
I mean,
Monica,
I think,
are you that superstitious that you believe in all of that?
Girl, I'm the girl who will not use a Ouija board at any point in my entire life. So, yeah.
Sydney, before this episode started, you were just telling us about the haunted home that you lived in. So I just And I believe you. I believe you. But I don't know that the person who lived in a haunted house gets to turn around and be like, you're suspicious? That seems a little unfair.
Wow, Monica, I can't believe you believe in that.
You believe in suspicions? Not like me, who lived with ghosts.
Yeah. My ghost friends growing up says that was a dumb superstition. Okay.
The ghost who lives in my house just whispered in my ear and said that you sound dumb for believing in that shit.
It was the ghost that lived in my closet. Thank you very much.
I'm so sorry.
Closet ghost specifically. Apologies to the closet ghost. Don't want to offend any vengeful spirits. So exactly. I would like to go on the record. Sorry to the closet ghost. We respect you wholeheartedly. That said, I guess my only takeaway from that scene is that, like, truly, they say Grace grew up in foster homes. Apparently, she liked her foster families, but maybe not enough to invite any of them to her wedding. Yeah, it seems she has truly nobody in her life other than Alex, which is something to be unpacked in a sequel for sure, or a prequel perhaps. But she just comes alone, and you know this because you're looking at her at the wedding, and her new husband, Alex, has this spooky aunt, this goth aunt whom I love, Helene, and she's the person sitting in, like, essentially they don't have any, like, groomsmen or bridesmaids, but spooky aunt Helene is sitting in, like, the chair of honor on the bride's side, traditionally, of the seating. Oh. So you know she doesn't even have someone to, like, sit in the first chair in the front row. You know what I mean? She has nobody. That's all. That's why she's marrying into this family of people she has. I don't know how many times she's even met them. Enough to plan the wedding, I guess. This is the first time. Well, she says in the beginning, your dad hates me and your alcoholic brother keeps hitting on me. So she's had some exposure to them. But I don't know if it's like the few days that they've been at the estate preparing for the wedding or if she met them like a month ago and they've been getting ready. You know what I mean? We don't have a lot of information. But
it hasn't been long.
No.
Yeah, not long. There is one scene before that scene that really sets up the whole movie. And we also get, like, you know, movies don't always give us an intro these days. Sometimes they just launch you in. Sometimes they'll do, like, a title intro. But this movie really set up the spookiness as it walked you through the games in their household. There's, like, a whole little display of games where I wrote them down, and then also it was an IMDb trivia, and I was like, oh, they saw more than I did even. But there is one game called LaBelle's Gambit, which is going to be particularly relevant because of Mr. LaBelle. And then the other games that I saw were Family Ritual and Secret Council. I saw one that was called Abracadabra, but I was like, that didn't feel as relevant to me as Family Ritual and Secret Council. And then there's another one that was called Sunrise, which only is really interesting after you've watched the movie. Although I guess that's all of them. But we get this scene where it opens on the games, and then we see two little boys, and their names are Alex and Daniel. Wow, are those main characters? And then there's a man running away, and he gets attacked, but he runs into Daniel, and he's like, will you save me? And Daniel's like, oh, yikes.
Get fucked.
Yeah, he
immediately
like,
is like, mommy, daddy, come kill this man I found.
Not immediately. Like, I feel like there is some moral quandary there with young Daniel, but I mean, like, he gets the stakes here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He knows enough to be like, this is how it's gotta be. Sorry, bud. Cause the guy's like, Daniel, help me. Like, tell me where to go or like, help me hide. And Daniel's like, he's in here. He's in here. Why did I just do a John Mulaney voice? Is that a John Mulaney bit?
I'm not one that I can recall.
Someone's in here. Yes, it's about being in the bathroom. Yes. I was like, why is this a John Mulaney voice in my head? Why did I slip into that? Anyway, so you see, and it's a man on his wedding night, and he's got his lovely bride who's like, has to be held back. But then 1 second later, she gathers herself stone cold, and they walk into the Le Domois secret family room. Cut to him walking in on her gown, and immediately you're like, okay, so things are gonna be bad.
Yeah.
But, okay, but her wedding dress is so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
But before we get too far away from the opening scene, I just want to say that I'm pretty sure this whole movie is actually just Aunt Helene's villain origin story. That's how I read it. It's just, you see her going from the blushing bride with a dope pixie cut in that opening scene, and then her husband gets freaking shot to death with arrows right before your eyes. And then from then on, she's just this surly little angry thing that's ready for blood for the whole rest of the movie. And I feel like that's the subplot that no one's paying enough attention to, you know?
Well, that's the foreshadowing. 'Cause while it is a Helene origin story in those 5 minutes, it's really set up to be a mirror for the scene that we see come later. Because while this is a family tradition, they have to do it anytime somebody joins the family. I don't think they have to do it for births. I guess that's a loophole. But they do it anytime somebody marries in, at least. And they've only had, well, we don't know exactly. We know they've had 2 rituals since then. Alex also at one point references how there are family members who didn't play the game. And if you don't draw a card, you also die. But like you and your bride die separately from the whole family because it's like you've rejected the family. He mentions a great uncle, he mentions a cousin Rachel, and he says there's a whole bunch of other people, which also explains like why the family is so small and there's no extended family other than Aunt Helene there to be participating. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe, I don't know, we don't know anything about when Daniel married Charity or about when Emily married Fitch, so I don't know if Alex participated in those game nights and then fucked off, or if he was like, that was part of his, I'm never going to be there, and how he got away with that. I guess as long as the ritual happens, individual people can be like, not me, though.
Well, it does say that Alex was gone for 2 years, and Emily and Fitch at least have 2 children who are both, like, at least,
a
like,
little bit older?
8 or something.
Yeah. Def older
so
than
that
two.
Was definitely a long time ago, and then, you know, it's been long enough for Adam Brody's character to totally start hating his wife with a white hot fury. So, you know,
he could have hated her at the beginning, though. He mentions she's a gold digger, and I do feel that he is very go along to get along the whole movie. That's part of the plot, is that he's like, I'm not trying to be the one who stands in the way of anything.
But so do we think, because he knew about this ritual, that he was like, I'm going to marry somebody that I don't really like just in case my family has to murder her and then I won't. And then now I'm married to her. I don't want to re-go through this. So like we're just stuck together.
I think I'm almost surprised that that character ever got married because, again, he's the little kid in the beginning where he clearly has some kind of feelings. He's trying to shield his brother Alex from this as best as he can, so he knows that this is inherently messed up, traumatic, etc. And then when we get to the part in the movie where Grace pulls her card, like you can see the trauma on both Alex and Daniel's faces. So I'm surprised he married at all. But we also learn while Alex really kept Grace in the dark about who his family is and what they do and why they're like this. Daniel told his wife Charity up front, and she was like, that's fine, sign me up. So, I mean, I think she is a gold digger, you know what I mean? She kind of says herself at one point, like, I would rather die than give up everything that I have through my marriage to you. I think she – and, I mean, kudos to her. Love that for her. But so she, I think, definitely was, like, the aggressor in that relationship, and he kind of was just like, I don't want to put this on anyone, but also I am a sad person and I don't want to be alone. I don't think he wanted somebody.
But I also just don't – I don't think he liked her that much. So I guess it's kind of
I don't
like,
think he liked her that much, but I think he was like, if you want to be part of this and you're going in eyes wide open, who am I to stand in your way when at least now I have somebody to be my buddy?
I also think that it's pretty clear that he, like, feels the guilt for – causing that man's death because he might have gotten away like his entire life and has kind of like sort of been like not in the driver's seat for his life since then. Maybe yeah. not the entire time, but it's very
he's just
clear
been on
how,
cruise control.
Yeah, totally on cruise control.
It's also complicated because he's the oldest sibling, and that's why we see him protecting Alex. And also Emily, their sister's a lot younger than them. It's kind of implied that, like, she wasn't even alive at the time of Helen and Charles's wedding, mm-hmm. or maybe she just was, like, too little. But she doesn't exist in the beginning, at least. We don't see her, and then she references later that, like, she doesn't know anything about it. But also we find out at one point that while he may be the oldest, he clearly is not, like, the heir, if you will. Because this whole thing, and I'll read the quote, but this whole family dominion is based on their deal with Mr. LaBelle, and we learn that history as Mr. LeDomas, Alex's father, is giving the spiel to Grace before they play the game. He says, he's like explaining that they're very wealthy, essentially, and that does he say at that point they got their money in gaming? I saw this movie in theaters with our friend and one of our members of our spooky crew, and I don't know if I read an article after the fact. But the whole time they're talking about their gaming empire, and in my head I was like, it also includes owning NFL teams. And then that I don't remember that being in the movie when I rewatched it for
they
this
do,
episode.
They do say
did
that.
They say that?
Yeah, the dad Ew. Does this whole speech where he's like, it started with this, he was a fisherman or whatever, and then they started the game thing, and then now under my control, like, we own 5 sports teams, blah, 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 something like that.
Basically, like, every generation adds more.
You gotta modernize. I get it. But the speech that he gives Grace is, some may call it luck, but, well, it's a little more than that. You know, it's almost as if someone's watching over us. It all began with a very generous benefactor and this box. You see, originally, great-grandfather was a merchant seaman. It was a hard life, and, like so many, he wanted more. Or on one of his many excursions abroad, great-grandfather came to meet a Mr. LaBelle. He was a passenger aboard the ship, a collector of sorts, purchasing exotic antiquities to resell to wealthy Americans. After discovering a mutual passion for games of chance, they passed a great many hours playing cards, and among Mr. LaBelle's possessions was that box. And one evening, after indulging in more than their fair share of rum, Mr. LaBelle proposed a wager. If great-grandfather could solve the mystery of the box before arriving at port, Mr. LaBelle would finance any endeavor of grandfather's choosing. Well, great-grandfather whiled away the long hours at sea studying the box until finally. And since that time, whenever the LaDomases are presented with a new addition to the family, we place a blank playing card into the box. Our initiate then has the privilege of drawing the card, and Mr. LaBelle will tell us which game to play.
Do you think, because Helene kind of mentioned it a little bit, she was like, me and Alex are so similar, mm-hmm. like, it was so obvious that this girl was going to have the same fate as her husband, who ended up dead. Is it, if you're, like, a horrible person, like Fitch and Chastity?
Charity. Although I called her Charity. Chastity, like, 5 times in my notes, too.
Yeah. Charity, then, like, if you're just, like, this really shitty, horrible person, they're like, ah, yeah, you can join this family. But, like, if, like, Grace is, like, great, and mm-hmm. then you must be sacrificed because you're too good.
Yes, yeah. I have, thoughts, and there was an IMDb trivia piece that referenced this as well, where it's like, it's heavily implied that Grace is rejected by Mr. LaBelle for 2 reasons, etc., etc. I think you can make the argument that it is about bringing Alex back into the fold, or you can make the argument that it is about rejecting Grace from the family, and I think either are super valid. Yeah. Because if Alex is the only one who has seen Mr. LaBelle in his chair, that's why he's destined to lead the family. So if he's the next patriarch, essentially, then he can't be marrying somebody who's gonna allow him to, like, leave his family, you know what I mean? And arguably Grace is that person. Mm-hmm. But also you could say it's not just that Alex picked somebody who would help him leave the family, but it's that somebody would potentially actively work to bring the family down. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you could say Grace is good enough that she would not just be like, I am not going to associate with those people, but she might actually be like, they're full-blown murderers, and I am going to tell somebody. But yeah,
he just knew she'd be a narc. Yeah, immediately. And they were like,
energy.
That's what I was saying with Spooky Goth Aunt Helene. She's a mirror for Alex at so many times. And so it's like the movie, you know, once we find out what the game is and that it's hide and seek and that the whole family is trying to kill Grace, Alex is like, I never wanted to do this. I never wanted to be here. I'm going to help you escape. And he's just like not necessarily, he's struggling. He doesn't really know if he's buying into this whole deal with the devil thing. But so he's like, yeah, we're going to get out. But it's the whole time his family is like, no, no, no. Like there's a moment later on with the mom, where she's talking to him and she's like, you can say that you're trying to leave and you can say that you would do these things, but I'm your mom and I know that it's literally never going to happen. And Aunt Helene is also like, I see myself in you, and we saw her in the beginning. Yes, she was distraught. Yes, she wanted to save her husband, but the second that she realized, like, this has to go down, cool, calm, collected, put it away, compartmentalized, you know what I mean? Like, she gets it. She's on board with this whole arrangement. And so I think, you know, we want Alex to help Grace escape, but on second watch from the beginning, I was like, that was never going to happen. That was never going to happen.
Yeah. But there was part that I thought maybe, you know, I've seen this before, mm-hmm. but it's obvious that he's having doubts about, like, the veracity of, like, the magic involved, like this pact with Satan, because he has that whole quote where he's talking with his mom. And he's like, it's really easy to normalize things that you do that are strange because your mom and your whole family tells you that they're fine, which I was like, God, can I relate? Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, but like, he was like, the fact that we were like sacrificing goats every Sunday or whatever day, like that I thought was 100% normal that every family was doing that. But it's just because you guys basically gaslit me into it. So, like, he's just doubting the whole fucking thing, which, like...
I wrote that whole exchange down, though, actually.
Wait, do people not sacrifice goats on Sundays?
I mean...
Me in my haunted closet?
I fucking have respect for the Black Phillip, okay?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I did think it was interesting. Obviously, we've watched The Witch. We know that traditionally goats are the devil, so I thought it was, like, really interesting that goats were the animal that they chose to sacrifice in this movie.
It's just a reference to The Witch.
It's all a reference to The Witch.
Clear okay? reference.
It's a clear, reference to The Witch. But even in the IMDb trivia, they were like, for that goat that, like, punts poor Grace into the goat death trap, which we'll talk about that scene more, they were going to use a puppet, just like how they tried to use that big puppet in The Witch, and it didn't fucking work. They had to go with the real goat actor. And that's the moral of the story. At the end of the day, the goat actor is the way to go. Don't even try with the puppet.
Always the goat. Like, you always go with the goat.
Exactly. Thank you, Sydney. You get it.
Okay, so I would actually like to talk about Alex and whether or not he buys into any of this. Because I think you can make the argument both ways. Where he makes one argument himself to Grace, where he's like, if I didn't marry you, you would leave me, and you wanted the family, and that's why we got married and did the whole family thing, because that's what you wanted. So you can say...
I was so pissed when he said that. I was like, don't flip this around on her.
I know.
Damn it, you gaslighting piece of shit.
I know. So he's saying, like, I did this for you, but also he has that exchange with his mom, and she says, why did you leave us, Alex? He says, oh, I don't know, Mom. I don't know. Maybe one night when I was chanting and slicing the throat of a goat, it occurred to me that that wasn't a completely normal thing to do. But, and this is what scared me the most, it felt normal. It did. And I realized that you'll do pretty much anything if your family says it's okay. And then I met Grace. She's the opposite of all of you. She's good. And she made me feel like I could be good too. So if it comes down to you or her, I choose her. And the mom said, I don't believe you. And I don't think that you believe that a girl you've known for a year and a half knows you better than I do. Wait, that's not the quote that Chills. I wanted. Why did I read that?
Okay, Chelsea.
That's, maybe it's part of that same exchange.
That's what I was just talking about. And then you said, oh, well, I wrote that down. So I thought that was exactly what you were trying to talk about.
That was the quote that I'm trying to quote. But I guess maybe I just didn't include this part of the exchange in my transcript, but I think at that same moment, he's being like, I don't even believe in this. And she says, you let her draw the card, so you obviously believe. Oh, I guess that was like 1 second before.
Well,
yeah.
That was my thing too. Like, if he doesn't believe in it, like, why didn't they just like elope?
I mean, the argument, if you're Alex, is that she wanted a family. She wanted to have to be, she wanted her real permanent forever family. Mm-hmm. And so we had to get married and I had to bring her to part of the family because that's what she wanted. That's what you say if you're him. But also, he's a bitch.
Yeah.
So that, I don't buy
again,
that.
Like, if she just wanted to be married, elope. Like,
well, he
so
says
you
can't elope.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if he doesn't believe in his family thing, like,
I feel like elope. He's in, like, that in-between place because he's been away from the family for 2 years. So the memories of being with them slitting goat throats every Sunday, like, are a little fuzzy, you know, and, like, all that lore. He's not living in that world anymore. And so mm-hmm. It's easier to make it seem like it's a fantasy. But he also knows that one rule that's, like, if you get married and you don't do the game, you're gonna die and your wife's gonna die. So he's like, well, we could just have the wedding and it's all fake anyway. And then, like, I'm not...
Better safe than sorry.
Exactly. I'm not completely flouting all of these weird rules that have been drilled into my brain my whole life. So
I do think it's interesting that he is allowed to just, like, skip the ritual goat sacrifice and be okay. I guess as long as the goats are being sacrificed, maybe they're fine. I think this is one of those things where it's like, and I'm going to preempt anybody being like, this is a horror movie. You don't have to understand the rules. This is not The Leprechaun. The rules are here for a reason in this movie, and they're supposed to make sense. So I will be trying to get to the bottom of them. Obviously, you can't get married and not play the game, or you'll die. And we hear that anecdotally. Obviously, the goats must be sacrificed for some reason. We don't know what frequency we're saying every Sunday, but that's just what feels right in our hearts. But clearly, Alex has the ability to leave and not sacrifice any goats for 2 years and be okay. You know what I mean? I don't know
They didn't say that you die if you don't do it. It's just to get you in LaBelle's good graces. It's like you do that just to be like, we love you. Please continue to be nice. Here is the blood of a goat.
And the sister and her whole family live in Paris. So she's also not there all the time either.
Do you
so
think they're sacrificing goats in Paris though?
No. I think it's probably just
parents. That one house.
Yeah. Right? Like, I think, like, as long as somebody is doing it.
Somebody's slaughtering the goats.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it covers all of them.
I can't even joke about that. Keep these goats safe. Protect these goats.
I do wonder if you can. If you're not the one getting married, are you allowed to sit the game out? Like, obviously, we see the kids, Emily's children, Georgie and the other one. I don't think they ever say his name in the movie, but IMDb had a name for him, and I think it's, like, Gabe. But whatever. Obviously, Georgie and Gabe are not – Georgie's a little bit, but not on purpose, like, playing hide-and-seek with them. So obviously not everyone has to exactly, but, like, if – Fitch and Emily like couldn't make the trek if their chartered private plane from Paris got delayed or whatever for whatever reason, would that be okay? You know what I mean? Like, that's just a question I have. It doesn't really matter, but.
Someone should have written a book based on this movie and flesh it all out. It should be you.
Me. It could be me.
It should be you.
They were, like, really, like, bejiggity, being like, Emily, where are you? Like, you have to be here. It's almost midnight. Like, they were, like, so okay. I think, like, they have to be here.
Something that must be commented on, the word bejiggity that was just used. It is something I'm not familiar with. This registered South person, is this something that's part of your culture?
Yes, just like saying, it's ugly as homemade sin. Don't
ask. Oh, man, I love it. It's beautiful.
Ugly as homemade sin. I'm going to sit with that one. I'm going to have to come back to that one later.
Just ruminate on it. Think about it.
Okay, but since none of y'all are Southern and will never understand ugly as homemade sin, let's talk about this game, which is also ugly as homemade sin. If somebody made me play this game, I would be furious. Oh. And I think that Grace was so underprepared.
I know.
For anything that happened to her. I think that, like, Alex took a gamble on Grace getting, like, an ordinary card. He was so fucking selfish that he just hid the fact that hide and seek, the game that they have to play where she has to die, was even an option.
He was like, it's gonna be Yahtzee. It's gonna be Yahtzee for sure.
Right? And she's just like, I'm great at checkers. I get for theatrical purposes, but like if I'm just going down to game night on my like wedding night with my in-laws, I'm taking my wedding dress off. Like I'm not playing Yahtzee in my wedding.
They're all in their ball gowns and suits still. So she would have been underdressed, but more prepared to be hunted.
Right? I guess, Alex took a risk, and to a degree I see the logic in it where he was like, what are the chances that she's gonna pull the one bad card in the deck when there are so many games in our universe, you know what I mean? Could play a little hopscotch, could play a little handball, you know, a little flag football.
One of the options.
A little tetherball. Foursquare. You know, there's an infinity of games. Could be a little go fish. I mean, personally, I kind of am philosophizing that the games that they play are based on their personality because Old Maid is so funny for Fitch. And Chess is perfect for Charity. So, I mean, that could just be like a writing joke. But I like to think that it's part of the lore.
Yeah.
What if they played drinking games? Like, was Flip Cup an option? Flip Cup, like, beer pong?
And they just all get smashed together.
Oh my god. It would have been one thing, though, if, like, it was actually a deck of cards and there's, like, however many options and she pulls one. But that ain't how it works, honey.
No.
You put a blank card into a magic devil box and he decides. So, like,
Mr. LaBelle looks into your soul and tells you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would be like, that. This is suspicious. Like, a blank card already? I'd be like,
So there's, like, a tiny little printer inside of this? If, like, how does this work?
Here's the thing. Alex took the risk that he was like, what are the chances that she's going to get hide and seek? Hopefully low. And then if they only have to do this for weddings and they clearly have no cousins, all of his siblings are married. He's like, we're not going to have to do this again until Georgie or Gabe are grown up and getting married. I've got 20 years to figure out how to explain this, I guess. So I just am going to be like, this is a problem for 20 years in the future, Alex. And I'm going to just not deal with it. And I'll risk it all. But also, he really
honestly,
put a lot of his
man.
Faith. Yeah. So being like, this is a problem for future me is something all of my guy friends always said in college. constantly. Even if it was like constantly. An hour in the future me, they were like, that's a problem for future me. Okay. But you know, he also really put a lot of his faith in the family that none of them would spill the beans. You know what I mean? Because like, they're all clearly very messy, and some of them, like Antoline, really buy into this. We saw a lot in the beginning. He kept being like, what did she say to you? What did she say? Like, and he was really suspicious anytime somebody talked to Grace one-on-one. But the second that they sat down for hide and seek, and I was like, wow, he just really, you know, it's one thing to be like, I am risking it all that she does not get hide and seek. It is another thing entirely to be like, I don't think that anyone else will even spill the beans. I'm just going to pray and hope.
Like in his mind, he's like, we're going to do this one thing and then I'm going to whisk her away and we're never going to talk to my family ever again. So that's like a very dicey, it's still not a good gamble. But I mean, it's just so sad at the beginning of,
the hide and seek. Sorry to interrupt. But if that's his whole plan, we're going to play this one game, get married, whisk her away, never see my family again, then why did you marry her in the first place? Because if your argument is you married her because she wanted to have a family, but you're going to marry her and then run away from the family, Alex, you're full of shit. I hate you.
Well, also, she hates his whole family too, I feel.
But she wants to be part of it. That was her whole thing. She said to Andy McDowell, she was like, I want my forever permanent family. I wrote it down also.
Of course you did.
Of course I did, because, you know, I just like wrote down every quote in this movie, I guess. Yeah, she says, I always sort of dreamed of having a family. I mean, I'm sure Alex would have loved living in sin forever, but he really understood how important it was for me to finally have a real permanent family, and I just don't want to let you down. Like, she was all in on the family thing, even if she's like, I know they're fucked up. Because she calls them moderately fucked up in the beginning, and he's like, moderately? Oh. And I was like, yeah, is right. Tell her right now how fucked up. And he was like, no. Because he was like, that's a problem for future Alex. But
yeah.
And she was like, ready.
The moral of the story is that Alex fucked it huge.
yeah. He just, I do hate him personally with a passion.
He's not nearly hot enough for her. So that's a big red flag from the get-go.
She was like, your alcoholic brother keeps hitting on me. And then I was like, the alcoholic brother that's hitting on you is Adam Brody? Dump this man.
Adam Brody with like the sexiest, like My Chemical Romance, Panic at the Disco energy, just like dripping out of every pore, like, but very also, emo.
Don't marry Daniel either, for the record. Yeah, also no, a bad choice. No,
very bad choice. Just whether stay away or not from he's part dominion.
Of a, yeah, whether or not he's part of an evil dominion who has made a deal with the devil, sad boys who need a lot of therapy, they're worthy of love, but you can't fix them until they're fixing themselves.
This family needs so much therapy.
Daniel specifically, because the other Alex and Emily clearly have been sheltered from a lot of this, and are like just kind of. Alex is like, "This is bad," and I know that this is bad. And Emily's just like, "I'm having fun," love that
Emily
for her.
Has a coke. Emily's
Emily
just
has
a coke
a
problem.
Raging coke addiction.
Yes,
my.
But I feel like it's in a fun way for her.
It's in a fun way for her.
Obviously, it's in a fun way for her. Because her she's not going to go broke because her family has so much money.
She's not going to go broke, and she doesn't need to have a job, and she clearly can hire nannies to raise her children, which is what she does. So, I mean, when you talk about, like, functional addicts, like, she's got all of the resources to be a functional addict.
I wouldn't call her functional at all because she causes the death of 3 people.
Yes.
There is a quote, though, that I, like, highlighted and bolded in my notes because I was, like, relatable. And it was after she killed the second maid by accident.
Second maid. That's the one with the freaking crossbow, by
the
way.
That's the crossbow one,
That's
yeah.
the crossbow into the mouth.
And Fitch is – and she is just, like, tweaked out. And Fitch just goes, here, honey, let's find you an edible to even you out. Mm-hmm. And I – lost.
I wrote that in my quotes.
Oh my god. And okay, Chelsea, I know you wrote this down. So for right off the bat, this is when Grace realizes that this isn't just a fun game of hide and seek, because at first she really thinks it's fine and she's sitting in this dumb waiter like, "Ugh, I'm bored as hell. Let me get out of here." And then she immediately realizes that things aren't that way when Emily fucking shoots Clara the maid in the eyeball. Directly in the eyeball. Also, this movie does a really good job of, like, making the kills, like, still horrifying even though you're laughing the whole time, because every person who dies, like, gurgles incessantly for, like, a minute afterward, and it's really well done. But I know you wrote it down, Chelsea, because how could you not? What is the quote that Emily says when she comes back to get her gun after that, when she looks herself in the mirror and gives herself that little pep talk?
I don't know that I did write that one down, actually. No! I might be in the notes part, but it's not in my quotes part. But there was some dialogue about, like, it has to be the bride or whatever from Aunt Helene. But what I wrote down was that the dad was like, "Why did you shoot her in the face, sweetheart? You need to maim her. She needs to be alive for the ritual."
So she's just fucking it up on all accounts. And then she, like, looks herself in the mirror and she's like, "Come on, girl, no more fuck-ups." And she just shoves, like, a handful of coke up her nose. It's really inspiring. And, like, everywhere she goes, she forgets her weapon and then, like, freaks out about it.
You're right. I did write that down. I wrote that quote down in my notes section where she says, "Okay, girl, no more fuck-ups. You're a winner." You're a winner. I was like, "Oh." I also loved, she had so many good quotes, but later on, after she accidentally kills her second maid, the one with the crossbow, she says "cock" as a curse, and I thought that was funny, and so I wrote down that quote as well, where she goes, "Cock, I forgot my gun. Daddy, I forgot my gun. I suck." And that's when she's handed the crossbow, and then immediately fires.
I love how much everyone curses in this movie. Like, I felt that Grace was so relatable because I was like, wow, this is exactly how I would be relaxing.
She is exactly how I would be reacting to these things. Everything she does is incredible, but she has a special gift for cursing.
Incredible.
Because there's another quote that I wrote down from her. I mean, I think I keep wanting to call her Melanie because that's the actress's name. But Emily, I think, had some of my favorite quotes because I just loved her spoiled baby princess energy, and it really spoke to me, and I loved it so much. Not that I necessarily, like, want it for myself or want it in a partner, but I just thought it was delightful on every level.
She's really perfect.
Yeah, the way she kept being like, "Daddy, I don't know what I'm doing." And they were all just like, "It's okay, sweetheart." I was like,
"It's okay, princess. Beautiful.
You're fine."
There's also another, like, great cursing moment. There's a moment when Andie MacDowell, aka Becky, aka Big Beautiful Mom, who I love so much. She is so gorgeous. She sexy is an mommy. Angel. So sexy.
Big Mama.
Big Mama. She screams, "Holy dick," at one point, I'm pretty sure. I just, like, really didn't expect that from her, but it was also perfect. And I love her.
Yeah. My favorite curse moment came from Grace, and it is, you know, she's played the hide and seek game for a while. At this point in the movie, she has managed to escape the house. Alex managed to disable the security system enough to, like, get the doors and windows unlocked so she could get out. She's, like, gotten to the edge of the property. She had that horrible, really, truly upsetting scene where she breaks part of the gate and squeezes through, and part of it just, like, there are two moments in this movie that are so body horror for me. Oh. And one of them is the goat shed scene with her hand and the nail and the ladder.
Freaking Georgie shoots her in the hand with what gun? What kind of weird ass gun was he using?
It was
in my notes.
I say love her punching a child.
Yes.
Hate her falling into a pile of corpses.
It's terrible. Just like she has an open wound. You can see through her hand. That child deserved to be punched. I'm sorry. I'm not usually for that sort of 100%. Thing. But when he shoots you in the hand, you can punch him in the face.
Yeah, especially because he doesn't even, like, get the stakes here. He was just like, you guys are doing it.
Yeah. And, like, mommy was trying to kill everybody, so I will too. But, like, she literally has a huge hole in her hand and then is immediately yeeted into, like, freaking Bacteria City, USA. And I was just like, oh, mm-hmm. God, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I did write in my notes. I was like, that's going to get infected. Mm-hmm. And then she climbs out and she slams her hand with the hole onto a knife that just goes right through the wound.
It's a nail. Well, it's a huge what did I say? Nail. Oh, you said knife.
Oh. In my head, I said nail. But that scene is, like, really viscerally upsetting to me. And then when she's pulling through the gate and it's, like, cutting her and you see that it's cutting her and she just has to grin and bear it and get through it because this is her chance at escape. And she does it because she's a warrior woman and she's a queen, an icon, a legend.
Seriously.
Because she hears that there's a car coming, but then the car drives right past her and is just like, get out of the road. And she has the best response, which is she says, what the fuck is wrong with you, you fucking animal, you piece of shit, little tiny dick licker, fucking asshole, fucking. And then she cuts off and just says, fucking rich people. And I was just like, ooh.
Yes, girl.
Because she called quote. Georgie, she called when she punched Georgie after he shot her in the hand, she called him a little fucker. And I was like, that is very generous for what this moment is. That's very sweet of you to only call him a fucker because he is a child. And then 5 seconds later, she's like, you piece of shit, little tiny dick licker. And I was like, come through my
cursing. Let that anger out. Also, like, besides being the best cursor in the land, she's the best screamer, like, truly a scream mm-hmm. queen. Like, the mm-hmm. utter, like, guttural, I don't even know, hell's breath that comes out of her when she puts her hand on that nail. Oh, my God. She's so good at it.
There's a piece of IMDb trivia about that moment where they were like, the nail is CGI. They didn't know if they were going to be able to, like, sell it on the film if it was going to look good. But when they saw her performance and that scream, they were like, chef's kiss. Beautiful.
Beautiful. As somebody who wants to marry into an incredibly wealthy family.
Dominion.
Yes, I'm looking to marry into a Dominion. Or create my own dominion.
You can create your own dominion. That's fine with me. But I'm not that I wouldn't marry a wealthy husband. But after watching this movie, I just need to refrain from those thoughts for a couple of days.
Here's the thing. In my prenup, because I now own property, so I will have my own personal prenup, there will be a we are playing no murder games in the prenup.
Good qualifier to have.
They make me do that. I can be like, oh, no, this clearly violates our prenup.
Our and prenuptial they would have to agreement.
They would have to disclose that their family partakes in murderous activities.
Just a little.
During these litigations.
Battle of the contracts there. You know, like, yes, they've got a contract with Mr. LaBelle, but now they've also got a contract with you. And it's like, which is the preceding document? You'd have to battle
who's
it out in
the
court.
Better lawyer.
If you wait until you go to court, obviously at that point, you know what I mean? It buys you some time. Dawn's going to hit.
I'm just saying, it's going in my prenup.
That sounds like a good plan. I think anybody should put in their prenup, no, you and your family are not allowed to murder me. It's just smart. Yeah. It's just common sense, you know?
It's just the right thing to do. It's the prudent thing to do.
I will say.
Before I go on a date, I always ask them, I'm like, you're not going to murder me, right? Because if you do end up murdering me and I've asked you and you say no, that is entrapment and I will sue you.
It is just rude. It's a lie. It's like, it's one thing to be a murderer, but to be dishonest, how dare you?
One time I, like, went to the club and then me and my friends, like, made friends with some guys and went to hang out with them afterwards. And some of the guys were being shady, so I turned to one of the dudes and I was like, you're not gonna kill us, right? And he got so mad. We got into like a big fight, and I was like, I think they're gonna kill us, and then we left.
As we've learned in recent news events, that is a very valid question to have.
One time I went out with some of our spooky crew members and our other friends, and one of our spookies wanted to stay behind at this guy's house, and I was very uncomfortable with the idea because he was also from the club. So I made him give me his business card, and then I was like, if she dies, and she'll know who she is if she listens to this. I was like, if she dies, I at least will have the business card of the man who killed her. But he was very nice about it. You know what I mean? He was like, yeah, here's my business card. And I was like, thank
exactly.
you.
Exactly. I said, you're like, I will file a formal
complaint with your employer.
Yeah. He was like, I'll ruin your career if you kill my friend.
I will not endorse you on LinkedIn.
I will give you a terrible Yelp review. But yeah,
okay. The thing is, oh, sorry, you go ahead.
You go, no.
I was going to move on with the movie. So if yours is relevant to this moment, please. Okay, so the thing, though, is about marrying into a murder family. And we kind of see this with Daniel throughout. And we really see it with Alex at the end. Is, you know, it's fraught because, like, obviously you want to save your spouse in such a situation as your whole family is trying to murder them. But saving your spouse also means your whole family, including you, will die. And so I like, obviously I am team Grace and I'm rooting for Grace, but there are moments, especially with Daniel, where I'm like, but I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. The stakes are so high.
If you believe that, like, you're all gonna fucking die the second the sun peeks through the window, like, you're trying to kill this girl with all your might. Like, ethics be damned, morality be damned.
Yeah, I mean, after she has the horrifying gate moment, she gets into an altercation with Stevens, who is one of the members of the working household, which also, like, what kind of salary are these maids and this manservant getting that they are cool and going along with all of this? Are they getting paid like $500,000 a year? You know what I mean? Like, at what point are you like, I will be cool with this without getting any of the immediate benefits of being part of the family? What number is that? I want to know.
So the girls, I feel like they're not down with that whole situation, everything that's going on. They're all hiding. But Stevens, 100%, is in it to fucking kill. Like, he probably works for them because he knows he gets a chance to murder people every 30 years. Like,
well, Clara is the first maid, and we don't really know where she stands other than she was doing bedtime with Georgie and Gabe. The second maid, who IMDb says her name is Tina, I don't think we learned that in the film, but I'm glad she has a name, I guess. But Tina is like, she's over here, is what she's starting to say before she gets shot by the crossbow. So she's clearly like cool with it. The third maid, whose name is Dora, and we learn that after the fact, she is the one who's like, I don't know what's going on, and I'm not even a maid. Mr. Lodomas just likes the way that I dance. And I was like, ew. But so clearly she's not, like, actually – she wasn't supposed to be there. I don't know why she is, other than they needed three spooky maids for the wedding, perhaps.
For the murder ceremony. That's a very important part of a satanic ritual. They're like,
they had a secret bachelor party the night before, maybe. But anyway, so after Grace has escaped, she has this tussle with Stevens, and he's driving her back, and she makes him crash the car, and then Daniel just, like, waltzes out. Of course, Daniel is there just, like, waiting. And they have this conversation where he says, I'm weak, and she says, you're a good guy, you're a really, really good guy, and Alex loves you and you love him. He's not gonna forgive you if you do this. And Daniel says, maybe not, but at least he'll be alive. I can't let my entire family die because of you. And I was like, points are being made. And then there's another moment where Daniel is kind of backing out again. And Emily is like, but my kids don't deserve to die. Like, you're really going to let my kids die because of this? And then immediately one of the kids is like, I shot her or whatever he says. And the mom is like, Georgie, I'm so proud of you.
So
and
it's
like,
okay,
now the kids can die. Like, the kids can go now. You know what I mean? Like, there was one second there where I was like, it is sad that the kids would have to die. And is that fair? But then he immediately was like, let me see if I have it in my notes. I don't know. I do feel like it's on her that she made the decision to have kids. I simply would not in such a position. You know what I mean? If I was like, if I have children, they will have to one day become murderers. I probably would just be like, it ends with me. But also, I don't know. I don't know that I want kids anyway. So maybe that's a trickier conversation to have. Where was I going with that? Does anyone know? I think it was
just... We have no idea.
I think it was just like, I'm Team Grace, but I get it. It's complicated. You know what I mean? Like, you okay. I hate to do this. I hate to do this, but in my time covering the Duggars in my celebrity news writing career, learned that the Bible says to leave and cleave. You're supposed to leave your family behind when you get into a new marriage. Obviously, you know, I also texted my sister-in-law to be like, when, at what point are you legally married after you've done your ceremony and you also have your
coitus.
Marriage license.
What is that? The coitus? Oh.
That is a very interesting interpretation, though, to be like, have they consummated their marriage yet?
That's an important part.
The only part that I am interested in marriage.
That's very Catholic. But... you know, marriage says leave and cleave. Obviously, they have a deal with the devil. So clearly, you're supposed to pick your family over your person here if it's the opposite of what the Bible says. So that makes sense to me. But it's just like it, you know, it's one thing if it's like one family member over your husband or wife. But to be like all of the family, including the children, I can see why they would. They'd be like, she's got to go.
All I'm hearing is that Chelsea is willing to sell her soul to the devil to join the...
No, I simply would not make the deal in the first place.
You would have killed Tamara Weaving. But if I had made the deal... Wow. How could you? With her chili pepper hand tattoo and you'd still kill her? I can't believe
you. I'm just saying, were I Alex... I get how it is a tough position to be in, especially at the end. The moment that he finally turns against her is after Daniel has already died, his favorite member of the family. And I didn't remember at first. I was like, does he think that she killed Daniel? Because 100% I would be like, that's the moment that he turns. But it's not just that Daniel is dead. It's also that he walks in on her braining his mom with the box. And I was like,
literally,
you know what?
Beating her to death. Well, I wrote down in my notes.
Not rooting for you, but fair enough.
I wrote down in my notes, hey, honey, I just beat your mom to death. Like, that's the energy.
And, like, he thinks he just killed his brother, who's his favorite member of the family. He just walked in on her, you know, braining his mother with the magical box. And he realizes that, like, she's not going to stay with him after all of this. Mm-hmm. And so she's like...
That's true. Ugh, that made me so mad. I wrote it in my notes, too. He said, you won't be with me after this, will you? And I was like, so you'd rather she just be dead?
Right? Like, I think... Why not? Sure. Yep.
He was just like, I don't get my happily ever after, then die. And that's how you know he's part of the demon dominion.
I mean, I get it. If you're choosing whether to murder, I get it is strong. But if you're choosing to murder your wife or inadvertently kill your family, and you know that if you kill your family, you're also going to lose your wife. You're like, might as well keep my family, you know? Might as well not murder everybody.
The second that he turned on her, I was like, these hoes aren't loyal. And I was furious.
Classic trolley problem issues, though, you know?
So, is it time to talk about the ending here?
Yes.
Yes.
This movie The first time I watched this movie, I wish that I could rewind my life to the moment mm-hmm. that I saw this for the first time so I could experience that just joy, shock, maniacal laughter, I think, was part of my response seeing this ending. Sydney, how did it feel for the first time to see this?
Okay, so I have some mixed feelings on the ending.
What?
So the ending was fun. Like, I had a good time with the ending, right? Like,
it's so fun.
In an overall, ask a 13-year-old how they want this movie to end, and this is what it gives you. But, I don't know. I think I would have liked it if it ended up not being real, and the curse was kind of made up, and they'd realize, like, oh shit, we've been doing this the entire time and like none of it was real. And then the house has been on fire for a while. And so she ends up like running and escaping the family as they're all like actively trying to kill her because like she has to die. Like she has to die now. And she's outside and the cops are there and they realize like everything that happens. And she gets that, like, that last laugh of, like, oh, yeah, fuck you. Like, you are mm-hmm. all going down. Like, but now, like, they've all exploded. Mm-hmm. the house is on fire. She's now left to explain what happens. Who's going to believe her?
That's I want to know what That's I wrote true. In my notes. Okay, because there's an IMDb trivia that says the cast and crew speculate as to what Grace does after the movie ends, and their guesses range from going on the honeymoon alone to being charged with murdering the entire family. Oh, but what I wrote in my notes, the thing is, and I first would like to acknowledge, I think it's really unfair that Aunt Helene, spooky goth Aunt Helene, the true believer of them all, really, is the first one to explode. That breaks my heart a little. Although I rationalized it in my notes by being like, well, she does appeal directly to Mr. LaBelle. And so it's like an answer, basically. Yeah. She's the one like calling him into this situation and he responds. And then Alex is last to go. And the way he's like, honey, sweetie, baby, like, clearly Mr. LaBelle said I'm okay and I get to be with you. We're going to be together, sweetie, baby. I wrote down that whole quote. Let me just read it real quick before.
The fact that she gets in that one-liner at the end. Oh, just mm-hmm. in time.
Yes, but he says, no, don't leave. Don't leave me, honey. Honey, I'm really sorry. I don't want to die. And she says, neither did I, you selfish fuck. And he says, no, I'm not like them. I'm not like them. I'm not like them. No, you made me better, honey. And he's not taking me, right? I get a do-over, sweetie. And that's because of you. Yeah, sweetie, Grace, I'm really scared. Just like, honey, baby, sweetie, shut up. So he does explode and then she goes outside. She's just like laughing.
Wait, you didn't say her one-liner. She said,
I want a divorce.
I want a divorce. And he blows up right then. That was the most cathartic thing of my entire life.
I liked it. And I'm glad it was there, but also it didn't add anything for me. You know, her, I want a divorce. Okay, and then at the end being like in-laws, I was just like, womp, womp, whatever. It didn't feel as smart to me as the other jokes in this movie and as the other really funny bits in the movie. It felt like anybody could have written that part. You know what I mean? And so that didn't really hit for me in that same way. although it is emotionally cathartic. But what I liked is after he's exploded, she's still in the room. And then the flames in the fireplace rush out and she sees Mr. LaBelle illuminated sitting in his chair. And we don't really know what that means other than obviously further confirmation that this whole thing is real, just in case everybody exploding in front of your eyes was not good enough for you. But to me, when she walks out and it's like, is she going to be arrested? Is she going to get away with it? Obviously, you know, the media can be like, they all died in a tragic house fire, except for the fact that lots of people have injuries, including her. She's been shot and stabbed. So clearly,
yeah, and the people already dead didn't explode. Like, Mama didn't explode and Daniel didn't explode.
Sure. But if you're doing like a media cover up, you know what I mean? You'll just be like, they all died in the fire. Just like there's some other family that they mentioned, the Van Horns or something like that, where they're like, they said they died in the fire, but they didn't really. But to me, that moment where Mr. LaBelle appears to her, I wrote in my notes, any plot holes with the ending can be explained by the fact that she's now got Mr. LaBelle on her side without having to make any kind of give and take contract with him. So she's won the game, which mm-hmm. means she's now won the favor from Mr. LaBelle, but also she didn't agree to any of this. You know what I mean? This is the initiation, but she wasn't initiated into the family. She was rejected, and then she beat Mr. LaBelle at his own game, which is him.
And that so was now like, he's yeah, doing, that was him like her
tipping
favor,
his hat to her. So any made such logic that says deal. She should get caught and should go to jail, and that the forensic evidence is going to say that she murdered everybody for their money, doesn't matter because now Mr. LaBelle is tipping the scales in her favor.
Totally.
So she's going to be great and she's going to thrive and I love her and she's a queen and she gets anything she wants here on out.
Yeah, I'm like, she's been through enough. She's going to be fucking fine after this.
Mm-hmm.
And she inherits everything.
That's why I texted my sister-in-law because I was like, would she inherit or are they not legally married yet? Like and my sister-in-law said that you're legally married. You pick up your marriage license before your wedding. You sign it at your wedding or the officiant signs it at your wedding. And then the officiant sends it in. And we had a small discussion where we were like, if your husband dies on your wedding night and the marriage license hasn't been received by the state yet and processed, you could probably make the argument either way if there are other people contesting the will, I guess. Like, are you legally married or are you not yet legal? It's a question for the courts and it could go either way. And I mean, it easily could be, if she didn't have Mr. LaBelle on her side, it easily could be that they're like, you clearly murdered these people. Like, you don't get to inherit their dominion. But Mr. LaBelle has given her the little hat tip of respect, which means she gets away scot-free and she gets everything. The house is burning down and she probably does not want this home where she's been terrorized and they've been sacrificing goats and Charles's body full of arrows is still in the pit outside. You know what I mean? But now she owns a bunch of NFL teams, presumably, you know, so she's gonna be just fine. And
she's a one woman dominion.
Yeah, I mean, this is the moment where I'm going to transition, I guess, to our regular segments real quick, because what I think is what I want for her after she has this wealth and power and a new lease on life at her fingertips is a girlfriend. And that's one way that I think this movie could be gayer. Are there others?
She's just off men after this, and I don't blame her for that. She can finally, like, live her Yellow Truck Taylor fantasy with some hot honey.
Yeah, you're going to tell me she's wearing Yellow Truck Taylors and she's totally straight? I don't buy it. I get big bisexual energy off of her.
I don't buy it. Yeah, I love a bicon, and she's definitely one. I also think there's no way in hell that Stevens is straight. So we do, I think, have a confirmed gay character here. I just want to
put I don't think that Charity on. Is straight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know that Charity really likes Daniel. I think she just likes
money.
What marriage Daniel's to Daniel money. Provides.
She's
money. Yeah.
Like, she maybe doesn't feel interest in any type of person at all. She just likes money.
She could be asexual or aromantic. She could also be a lesbian. I don't know. I don't want to speak for her. I just she's not straight. I don't believe it. I don't buy it.
She is she's a money sexual.
Yeah, anybody she's in with the queer community.
Hard money she's sexual. Attracted to.
But okay, just we didn't talk about Stevens enough just for a second. Like, any man mm-hmm. who gets that into singing, what is that song that he sings?
The 1812 Overture.
He is so horny for the 1812 Overture. It is outrageous. First when he's conducting his whistles, and then when he just starts singing the song himself. Mm-hmm. Like, that whole scene in the kitchen is just beautiful. Also, shouts out to Grace for using his teapot against him. Truly wonderful. And also, I really love that the reason that he dies is because he blasts that fucking song so loud that he can't hear her as she's about to eat him. He's just straight by.
But like, as the whole family is like on FaceTime and they're like, no, no. And he's just like, yes, classical music.
God, I mean, that song is really exciting, but I've never seen anyone get so fucking jazzed about it, and I'm happy for him. At least he felt joy in his final moments.
I also did think, though, like, if we wanted the movie to have a gay character in it, easily one of the siblings could be married to somebody of the same gender.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That would have been so easy.
But also, also Aunt Helene, also, look at her. She's not straight.
Oh, no. She immediately became queer.
Yeah. 100%. You don't get to be this spooky aunt who's been alone for years and then be like, I'm straight. I just don't. The way she said Charles was the only man she ever loved, I choose to interpret it that as, like, she doesn't like men, but he was the exception. Not the she didn't say only person, she said only man, and that's what I'm taking from that line.
Also, there's no way you can tell me that Fitch is straight either.
Like, you can't. Has he explored that part of his identity? I don't think so. But does he have thoughts when he's watching How to Learn About Your Crossbow on YouTube? Yes, he does.
Yes, he does. He's like, I love that man in camo.
When he googled,
when he literally googled, are packs with the devil real or bullshit? And he's texting with a guy who's like, Kip, what's up, dog?
His friend Kip's like, hey, dog.
No, Kip is his gay lover.
the way canon. That I cackled when I saw packs with the devil real or bullshit. There's also another good Google moment that I just don't want to not be mentioned, which is that Daniel ends up poisoning his whole family so that he can help Grace escape. And first of all, he's like, hydrochloric acid, that seems bad. But then he answers it right away and he says, don't worry, I Googled it. They'll just shit weird for a week.
So it's like he kind of doesn't believe it either if he says that. I don't know. I feel like they're all a little wishy-washy on what's going to go down if she makes it till dawn. And then, boy, do they find out.
They call it the eradication clause. I just feel like the original contract either has been lost to time or they just – it didn't ever have specifics. They clearly don't know in what way – yeah, they don't know in what way they'll be eradicated. And so actually that's a really delicious moment after they're like, hold on. And then Fitch says, nothing's happening. I knew it. I fucking knew it. It's all bullshit. Obviously, 1 second later, he explodes. But that moment where you're like, wait, is this the end of the movie? I loved that it gave you that taste. And then it was like, no, no, no. They're exploding. They're going to explode.
Exactly. Like, Sydney, earlier you were saying you wish that it turned out to all be bullshit. And I feel like the ending gives you that and it gives you the magical ending, too. Because you get, like, a full 30 seconds where you're like, oh, fuck, this actually was all for nothing. And then,
where they're
no.
Like, they see the sun and they're flinching as if they're, like, vampires that are going to turn into dust. Like, you know what I mean? They have that moment and then they all kind of start to, like, peek around, look at each other, and be like, we've been sacrificing goats for nothing.
Please, goats.
And then immediately. immediately, then they explode, and I was just like, the fact that we get both is a gift.
It really is a gift. They really were thoughtful and kind to us with this ending. So, okay. We've covered where it's gay and where it could do more. But where is our boy Matty Lily fitting into the picture here? It's hard when the cast is this gorgeous.
And so perfectly cast. Everyone is incredible in their role. And there's not a role, to me at least, that's like an obvious fit for Matthew Lillard. I think you would just have to pick a role that you would like to see him stretch his muscles a little to do. You know what I mean?
I feel like
unless you guys have one
dad.
Where you're like, this was obviously Matty Lily to me. What about it?
I didn't feel strongly any particular way, but, like, I'm thinking of, like, the actor who was in it who I liked the least. Mm-hmm. And it would be, well, the dad was still great. The dad was still great, but I
he's
just
so great.
Was overwhelmed by the fact that he literally does not have an upper lip. There is not one that is present on his face. And look, it was like completely
someone who doesn't have an upper lip, that doesn't make me any less valuable to a movie cast,
I am
Monica.
Looking at your upper lip right now. It is there. His is
look at
not
it now.
There.
Hold on. It's there when I smile, but let me... No, now I'm so bashful.
You
but
have
it's
an
not
upper
there.
Lip. I'm looking
I'll,
at
I'll
it.
I'll tell you right now.
This
it's
man
not there.
Is like this. Like, oh.
We are three white women. None of us have true upper lips, okay? Like, we just don't, they don't exist.
That's
but,
unfortunately true.
I think he would have done a great role as Stevens.
Yeah. I could totally see like, him as Stevens. He could easily bring the. He could bring the freaky for that, for sure.
And I think if this movie was older and, like, was set in, like, the early 2000s, he would have been a good Daniel, too.
I thought, actually, that he would be a really interesting Alex. Not necessarily because he is, like, typecast for that kind of role. You know what I mean? Like, you would more traditionally see him as a Daniel-esque character who's, like, messy and conflicted. But... and I know whenever I talk about Good Girls, I always say he has a certain cuckolded energy. That's really only season two. In later seasons, he and his wife, Christina Hendricks, kind of get on board and start to work together. And he has a much more nuanced character shift. And I think I would really like to see him as Alex playing that small internal struggle of being like, what do I do and what do I believe? And then finally having to like make a decision and go big or go home.
I would have liked to ask Alex frankly, too, because then I would have maybe cared about Alex at all, because that actor just like really, if there's a weak spot in the casting, I just like it's him for me, because I didn't feel very strongly about him at any point except for when he was being a gaslighting fuck and I wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he did an incredible job, but it's just a much quieter character and a cast of very loud characters and a cast of actors that I already know and love from other things, and I don't have any other familiarity with, what's his name, Mark O'Brien. And so I just, I'm not bringing anything to that casting myself the way that I am Donnie from Orphan Black or Winona Earp. And so it just, or Jennifer's Body, you know what I mean? Like there's so much that I am have in my heart already for Auntie McDowell. And I just, it wasn't there for him. And I think that's where I would put Matthew Lillard. But sorry to my spooky king. I don't want him in this movie. I think it's perfect as is.
It's truly. I'm with you on that. Sometimes you just can't mess with it. It's already chef's kiss.
When it comes to a segment where there is an obvious answer, though, we've got our dumb bitch segment. And I think there's just, for me at least, maybe you guys will have different feelings, there's really only one person who fits the bill.
There can only be one.
Is it Alex?
It's Alex. I mean, okay, here's the thing.
I was like, what if I'd gotten this wrong?
You guys have done this before, Alex. Too, where you've been like, it's obvious it's one person, and I've been like, is it? I think in this movie, you know, we can give nominations to other people, and I think there's a moment in my notes as the weapons were being handed out in the beginning of the hide-and-seek game where I was like, do they know how to use these weapons? Like, have they been training with these weapons? It quickly becomes clear, no, they haven't. No. But then also there's a line later on where Auntie McDowell fires the crossbow and says, she misses. And she says, in my defense, it's been a while. And I wrote, okay, so Auntie McDowell does have some training, or at least experience. You know what I mean?
From the last time they pulled the hide and seek card. Yeah.
Which I think, like, to some degree, I get that they're not training with these things, because they're like, God willing, we never have to do it again, and we haven't had to do it in like 30 years or 20 years or so. And so I get to a degree being like, we're just gonna pretend that doesn't happen, we're not gonna acknowledge it. But I also feel like yes, they have every advantage when it comes to this murder game, but you're not even going to know how to use a weapon. You know what I mean? You're just going to hand out crossbows and nobody's going to know how to... He has to go in the toilet and YouTube how to get to know your crossbow. It just feels like that's dumb bitch behavior. But ultimately, Alex is the dumb bitch of the movie. No questions asked. No reservations. I went through and like highlighted moments in my notes where I felt like it was particularly little bitch behavior from Alex, and when it was clear all along. Because there's a moment in the beginning, okay, after the "we prefer Dominion for our family," when he's still being like, "Are you sure you don't want to run away? Are you sure you want to get married?" He says, "I'm giving you an out." And it's like, no, you're not, because she doesn't know what she's signing on for. You could just give her the truth. He, again, doesn't anticipate anybody revealing what hide and seek is. She calls him a bitch or something at one point, and he's like, "If I told you, you would have left." And it's like, well, maybe you should have let her. Or maybe if you wanted to, I mean, I guess maybe they met by chance and then just fell in love. But like, if you don't want to be part of this whole experience, you could just upfront be like, "I don't believe in the concept of marriage and I never want to get married, even if I want to be with somebody for the rest of my life." You know what I mean? Like, you could just, I mean, I will say, does common law marriage count to Mr. LaBelle? Like, if you're just living with your person for 8 years, is he going to get you either way? But if that doesn't count, you know what I mean? You could just be like, "I don't believe in marriage," and find somebody that you love and want to spend your life with and never marry them. And be clear up front that that's what you want, so you don't end up in a situation with someone like Grace who wants to be married and has a family. But I just think everything he did is dumb bitch behavior. Literally every single thing.
There's nothing more to say. He's a dumb fucking bitch. I can't stand him.
I would like to nominate one smart bitch. And that, obviously, other than Grace, everything she does is perfect and wonderful. And she's an icon and I love her. I always have an issue in movies when someone is brandishing a knife that they like... hold it like this, pointing out, which is good for slicing but not good for stabbing. And I'm always like, should you hold your knife to slice or to stab? I would hold it to stab. Stevens holds the knife like this to stab and he slices with it. And so I was like, okay, Stevens is the king. He knows what he's doing and he's great at it. And he can perform the whole 1812 overture by himself. Amazing.
That's why I was saying earlier, he definitely lives to kill. He loves it and loves working for this family because he gets that opportunity. You can tell by the joy in his eyes.
I bet he gets like $500,000 a year. They've clearly got endless money. You know what I mean? And if you're going to buy somebody's silence, it seems to me that it would be expensive.
Definitely.
It would be very expensive to buy my silence.
Same. Okay, so what do we think about this movie in the end? What are our knives out of fives here?
I'm going last.
You're going last? Okay. Monica, do you want to go first or shall I go first?
You go first.
Okay, I'll go ahead. And the thing is that I'm just going to really start this off on a high note, which is that I love this movie. I loved rewatching it. I thought it was a really fun rewatch. I would watch it again tomorrow if I needed to. If you asked me to, I would have absolutely no problems. I think, do you lose the elements of surprise because you don't know if it's real, if this is not real? Yes. But I love the ending so much that I think it was just as wonderful to watch the second time, and I think it would be wonderful to watch every single time after that. To me, it is really kind of a perfect film. The only thing that I take issue with is that they kill three maids because they don't have any personality or character development. They're just there to die before any of the family members die. That's really my only issue. But I think that is kind of just, unfortunately, a trapping of the genre. To me, this is a five knives out of five movie.
Wow. That's beautiful. I love that for you. Also, I will say, I think that the maids all dying like they did is sad. Also, I think that it's really funny. But I also think the fact that there's like no character development for them, like kind of like shows you like how shitty of people the family is too. Cause they're sad a little bit, but they're like sad because like their private dancer died or because they thought that one was the hottest.
Clara was my favorite.
Yeah. They see them as like pawns. So I think it's like a device in the plot to like make you realize even more so how shitty these people are. Yeah.
The reaction is the "it's so hard to find good help these days" reaction, not "oh no, this person has died."
100%. So, okay, for me, I also am going to give this one a high rating, and that's because, like, I've had this conversation before. I'm not sure if it was on the pod, but, like, it's so hard to find, like, good camp these days. Like, people try to do modern camp, but like the person who's doing it the most is like Ryan Murphy, and I can't stand him. I hate all of his stuff so much.
Okay, wait. Sorry, before you say any more, reading IMDb trivia, it was like the writer of this film, Ryan Murphy, makes a cameo, and I was like, Ryan Murphy! And I got really upset, but it's a different Ryan Murphy. His name is like Christopher Ryan Murphy.
Oh,
and I was like,
God!
I had a heart attack for 1 second there.
Oh my God, if this is a
Ryan Murphy, I can't like it if it's a Ryan Murphy movie, even though I do think he does a lot of good things.
I was just going to throw myself into the street. Like, there's a window right here. I was going to defenestrate myself.
I had a crisis, and then it was soothed so quickly, thank God, but I had to share that experience.
Well, you just
made me have
that roller coaster of emotions, so thank you. But yeah, like, Ryan Murphy, I can't stand his fucking shit. Like, I get that it's campy or whatever, but it's also obnoxious. And it's not campy in the same way, like, the OG Clue. Like, all the movies that Sydney loves that makes her hate new movies. And everybody and their mother was like, oh my God, there's so much camp in Knives Out. Knives Out did camp right. No! Knives Out did not do camp right! This movie did camp right. This is camp. It's so good. Oh, God. I loved it. And watching it again, like, I wasn't sure if it was gonna still pack the punch, but, like, no. I loved every second of it. It's a beautiful movie. Samara Weaving deserves an Oscar for her scream work alone in this film. Like, it's absolutely incredible. So, I don't know if I can give it, like, a full 5 out of 5. That's hard for me. You know how I am. But I will give it, like, a 4.89999999 repeating.
I just realized that I forgot to do any of the background because I was so excited to just declare my love. But if you need it before Sydney tells her Knives Out of Fives, I will say this movie got 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb. And on Rotten Tomatoes, it got 88% fresh from critics and 78% fresh from audiences. Obviously, I just gave it 5 knives out of 5. So I think that is disappointingly low. But maybe it's pretty good compared to some other movies we've done.
And the other Sydney, movies that we've done and we've loved. So
I know. But Sydney, where do you fall on that? I gave it a 5. Monica gave it a 4.8999, which I'm going to go ahead in my heart and round up to a 4.9, but I'll write it down accurately for the record.
We don't round up on this show.
Yeah. In my heart, I can do whatever I want. And in my heart, Sydney loved The Witch. But in reality...
In my heart, there is no way that she put the leprechaun and the witch in the same fucking, oh God, universe. But anyway, it's okay. We talked about it today. We've moved past a lot of the anger, but not all of it.
I was about to say, have we?
Not all of it. I'm going to need some time. Okay, but what did you think? What did you think?
I liked this movie. I had a really good time. I only watched it once. I didn't rewatch it. I just watched it the first time. So I'm going to do this on my first impression, and I will give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Ooh, that feels pretty good to me coming
from you.
That's
like a B+.
If you are contextualizing that rating, it may as well be 5 knives, you know?
For real.
Monica's like, only Sydney do we round up.
Sydney, we round up.
You still don't round
up. She is mean. And then my ratings are the ones that are perfectly accurate.
we just compare and contrast.
Sure.
All right. Well, that brings us to the close for the beautiful Ready or Not. But next week is a special week because it's my birthday. And so I get to choose because it's all about me. I'm an Aries. Did you know that? Now you do. March 31st. Send me a card. Anyway, for my birthday present to myself on the podcast, we are doing a movie that I've just seen for the first time recently, but changed my entire life. And that is The Fly. And my God, what a film.
It is starring absolute daddy Jeff Goldblum.
At his almost peak sexiness, but you know, every year he seems to get sexier. But this was a really good one of the years.
Yeah, 1986 was a great year for Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yes, a fine year. And so I've seen this movie once. Sydney's seen it probably more than that. And Chelsea has seen it zero times.
Yeah. And she... She's poor Chelsea.
I'm going to tell you now that you're not ready. Because I know that you're not.
I've gleaned this because we also one time suggested it to Spooky Crew to watch, and everybody was like, no, absolutely not, hard pass, can't do that kind of body horror. And so I am afraid, but I also know that it is like one of the spooky classics, you know what I mean? And the fact that our Spooky Crew is too scared of it to watch it, and we watch a scary movie every Tuesday, I think speaks for itself. I am preemptively having feelings of terror.
But it also has Gina Davis in it, so you know.
Oh, all right.
It's so good.
Okay. And also, like, you're still going to laugh, like, a lot. Like, even in the most horrifying parts, I was, like, laughing from my horror. So I wasn't like, ah! I was like, what the fuck? So I think it's going to be a really good experience for you. And if it's
and
not.
And you're still going to be sexually attracted to Jeff. You just are. The whole movie.
He's a hottie all the way
through.
We'll
see, I guess.
It's a David Cronenberg masterpiece, and I'm so excited to share it with you. So thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard, please follow us on social media at @Spooky_Tuesday on Twitter and Instagram. And if you're on Facebook, we're Spooky Tuesday Pod. Also, why not go on the Apple Podcast and rate us 5 stars? It's a great thing to do. Any afternoon or morning, any time of day. And we'd love to hear from you.
What a fun activity.
What a fun activity. Why not compliment us? Doesn't that sound nice?
We desperately want your validation.
We do. We do desperately want validation.
Yeah, we do.
We started a podcast.
Bye, Spookies.
Spooky Tuesday was created by Monica Height, Sydney Thompson, and Chelsea Duff, and edited by Sydney Thompson. Our gorgeously spooky tunes are all thanks to Tamra Simons, who you can follow on Instagram at Captain Tamra, and our podcast art is by Mary Murphy, who you can find on Instagram at @the_moon_omg.
I'm really sorry about all this. It's true what they say, the rich really are different.